In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. We hear the second part of the climate engineering debate that originally aired March 15th, 2018, live on WBAI. In this debate, Professor Doug McMartin joins Dane Wigington. As you will hear, the discussion became more contentious because of an issue with defining terms and semantics. Professor McMartin says that according to the data he has access to, even if there is an aerosol program going on at 35 to 40,000 feet in the atmosphere, which he admits is possible, it doesn't show a significant measure of cooling the planet. This is a careful response with important implications. McMartin said the aerosol operation conducted at 35 to 40,000 feet would rain down within a week or sooner. If this is not intended to mitigate climate change, occluding the sun and filling the troposphere with particulates has its obvious consequences. Let's go now to hear that discussion. Now we're joined by Professor Douglas McMartin, a senior research associate and senior lecturer in mechanical and aerospace engineering at Cornell, and he's a research professor in computing and mathematical sciences at the California Institute of Technology since 2006. Professor McMartin has focused on what is termed, quote, the largest control problem, geoengineering. It's the idea that one might offset some of the consequences of climate change by reflecting sunlight back to space, some sunlight back to space. Professor McMartin, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
All right. We're here with Dane Wigington as well. And just for the record, Professor McMartin, you do not think geoengineering is going on or is happening. Can you tell listeners what type of climate research work that you do?
So I work on this, idea that it is certainly possible that one could, in principle, cool the climate deliberately by reflecting some amount of sunlight back to space. And that's not necessarily a good idea. It's not actually obviously a bad idea. The challenge essentially is that climate change is here. Climate change is going to get worse. And if we do not get our carbon emissions cut quickly enough, then there could be severe impacts from climate change, and so these ideas might make sense as a part of an overall strategic response to figuring out how to minimize some of the climate impacts and minimize some of the suffering.
Dane, do you have a response to Professor McMartin?
Well, I think we're here to discuss whether geoengineering has been deployed decades ago, and I would argue again that the data absolutely conclusively makes that fact clear. And I'll be glad to get into those particulars. If Mr. McMartin wants to state why he believes it's not going on, I'll follow up with some facts.
Right. We just came out of kind of a very interesting interview and discussion with Paul Beckwith. There were some agreements with Dane and some disagreements on some of the scientific data. Why do you suspect that geoengineering is not going on right now?
So I think the first thing is just to be clear on what one means by that word. And personally, I actually happen to think it's a terrible word because it doesn't really convey what one talks about, and different people can potentially mean different things by it. The way it has been used in academia, in universities, and in things that I work on. Broadly, there's two things that actually fall under that label. One is ways that you could actively pull carbon dioxide or other greenhouse gases from the air. So that's carbon dioxide removal. And the other is this so-called solar geoengineering, which is the idea that you could deliberately reflect some sunlight back to space. So there are other things that people do in terms of influencing weather and so forth that are not labeled as geoengineering in terms of the academic community. But if you want to be specific about reflecting sunlight back to space with, for example, putting, there's a couple of ways to do that. The most obvious way is to put a small amount of reflective droplets or particles, referred to as aerosols, very, very high up into the atmosphere, into the stratosphere, and they would reflect a little bit of sunlight away. The reason I can say nobody's doing that is, first of all, nobody's even capable of doing that today. We don't have aircraft that can fly into the stratosphere, that can fly high enough and deliver a useful payload. And if anybody was doing that somehow, it would be really easy to see it in satellite data. So there's all sorts of satellites that are constantly monitoring the upper atmosphere. Every time there's a small volcanic eruption, for example, or a large enough volcanic eruption to put material high into the upper atmosphere, those instruments will see the aerosols from that. And there's lots of other ways to sample the upper atmosphere as well. And so there's a vast number of
measurements. Doug, can we just stop right there before we go on to the other elements? I would want Dane to respond to this specifically. As you heard, Professor McMartin does not believe that it's going on because we do not have the aircraft and the technology to release the necessary aerosols to reflect the sunlight back into space. What are your thoughts on that?
So, Mr. McMartin, I'm understanding you to say that aircraft can't, we don't have aircraft that can fly into the stratosphere. Is that correct?
We don't have aircraft that can fly into the stratosphere and deliver a useful payload.
How high is the stratosphere? Where does it start?
So I should be a little more precise. If you wanted to actually reflect light, the reason that we talk about putting things in the stratosphere is that we're really interested in
I want to use my time on that.
Let me finish.
How high is the stratosphere? Let me fill in that blank, because we have scientific data to show that stratosphere in the polar regions especially is as low as 23,000 feet. We have KC-135s that at that altitude can carry 100 tons of material. Are you denying that 100 tons of material wouldn't affect the climate? And if you're claiming that planes or aircraft can't fly into the stratosphere, even at the mid-latitudes, a stratospheric altitude can start at 33,000 feet. All forms of jet aircraft can reach those altitudes. So I don't think what you're saying holds any water, Doug.
Dane, if you allowed me to finish my sentence, the reason we talked about...
It was my turn to talk, and I simply asked you one question, so go ahead.
So the answer to your question is that you need to get material up to at least 60,000 to 70,000 feet.
Okay, you're changing. You said into the stratosphere, and what you stated was not mathematically correct, so now you're actually picking an altitude that is not just the start of the stratosphere, but much, much higher. So, again, what you stated initially, Doug, was we couldn't do anything. You knew nothing was happening with climate engineering because we didn't have the capability to reach the stratosphere, and I'm saying that is simply not true.
So let me refine what I originally said. The reason that we talk about the stratosphere is because we need air mass that is sufficiently stable that what we put there actually stays there for a considerable length of time. And to do that, even quite frankly, even 60,000 feet is pretty marginal. You really want to be up at 70,000 feet or higher. And we do not
whatever your desired, whatever the desired parameters are, what does that have to do with the factual data that we have to show that the programs are in fact ongoing, from film footage, lab testing, Senate documents, presidential documents? I could go on and on. Whatever your desired parameters are for an experiment, that doesn't change the fact that the experiment is ongoing.
So we can go through all of that if you want and refute them all one by one, but the bottom line is if you want to make a meaningful difference to the temperature of the climate, you have to get your material very high into the atmosphere. And if you cannot get your material high into the atmosphere, you can't be doing geoengineering. If you said maybe Doug doesn't know all of the aircraft that exist, well, if you did put the material at 60,000 feet, we'd be able to see it, and you can't.
Well, nobody's talking about 60,000 feet, Doug. What we're here to talk about is, has climate engineering long since been deployed? And the data says absolutely yes. So whatever your you want to argue about what you would wish the parameters were, what was being followed for these experiments, it doesn't change the fact that the experiments are ongoing, and the data makes that irrefutable. So we're not here to argue semantics that because you have a particular definition of what stratospheric aerosol geoengineering that doesn't fit the reality that we see on the ground, therefore it's not happening. That doesn't really hold water, Doug. That's just your particular opinion of what should fit under that definition.
That's my particular opinion. It's not an opinion to talk about how long material stays at a given altitude. If you put material at 35 to 40,000 feet, it does not stay in the atmosphere long enough
to make
a significant difference to the temperature of the planet. So you can argue that maybe somebody's doing geoengineering and they're just insanely stupid, not actually cooling the planet.
Do you think, I'm not arguing that either, but do you think that detonating 2,000 nuclear bombs was a sane thing to do? I'm asking you. Do you think that was? Our governments around the globe engaged in that. I'm just asking a simple question. Do you think that was the same thing to do?
No.
Okay.
Let me ask you a simple question, Dane.
Okay.
Supposing somebody were doing geoengineering and it was not affecting the temperature of the planet, would you call that geoengineering?
If it fits the definition of what those operations involved, absolutely, positively, I would. Absolutely.
So if
just because
you said
it's not working doesn't mean it's not being done.
People were spending billions of dollars to do something that they knew didn't do anything at all.
There's much more to this than trying to cool the planet, which all available data indicates geoengineering could never do. It could only hide the symptoms. We have weather warfare that's historically documented. Do you deny that weather warfare has been ongoing for many decades?
So,
do you deny that?
What I said up front, the subject matter that I work on is specifically the question of could you cool the climate by any means. That is not weather warfare. If you want to talk about weather warfare, that's a different subject.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to cooling the climate by any means.
If I could clarify, though, while we're there, Jeff.
Yeah.
So you're not really here to discuss, Doug, whether or not geoengineering has been deployed. You're only here to discuss whether it could, if used properly based on the parameters that you would set for it, whether it might work if those parameters were followed, but not to answer the fact that it's already been deployed?
I will make a statement of fact. Nobody has deployed a deliberate system for cooling the global climate. Other things may be going on. There's no question that people do weather modification. That's a matter of public record. So one needs to be precise in one's terminology.
What evidence do you have on that statement?
That nobody is deliberately cooling the planet?
Correct.
So that's what I said. You would be, if somebody was, by putting materials sufficiently high in the stratosphere, you would see it in lots of observational records from satellites, from ground-based instruments, from people who do balloon flights up into the stratosphere. And you don't see that anywhere. Coupled with the fact that nobody, like I said, nobody's capable of it. You didn't disagree with the statement that nobody has aircraft that can get to 60, 70, 80,000 feet and deliver a useful payload.
Well, again, that's a parameter that you added after you said the stratosphere, and I refuted that because that's saying the stratosphere wasn't true. So you're saying that the particulates would show up. Let me read from a NOAA study. This is from NOAA, 2011. Here's the headline from the NOAA study. Increase in particulates high in Earth's atmosphere has offset some recent climate warming. July 2011, July 21st. A recent increase in the abundance. Bear with me 1 minute, then I'll give it back to you, Doug. A recent increase in the abundance of particulates high in the atmosphere has offset about a third of the current warming influence of carbon dioxide, CO2. And according to a new study by NOAA and published online at the edition of Science, the particulates in the atmosphere miles above the Earth's surface, small airborne particles reflect sunlight back into space, which leads to a cooling influence on the ground. These particulates are called aerosols, and the new paper explores the recent climate effects. The reasons behind their increases remain the subject of ongoing research. It's almost done. There's a point to this. Bear with me. Since the year 2000, stratospheric aerosols, have caused a slower rate of climate warming than we would have seen without them, says John Daniel, a physicist from NOAA Earth System Research Laboratory in Boulder. Author of the new study. The authors analyzed measurements from several independent sources, satellites, and several types of ground instruments, and found a definitive increase in stratospheric aerosols since 2000. Stratospheric aerosols increased surprisingly rapidly at that time, almost doubling in a decade. And here's the kicker for this whole study. The increase in aerosols in 2000 cannot be accounted for. Where are they coming from,
Doug? Actually, not true. Those increases in aerosols come from volcanic activity.
NOAA says no. Read the study. I encourage you to read the study. They cannot. It states the end of the study. The reasons for the 10-year increase in stratospheric aerosols are not understood and are the subject
are
of
now.
Ongoing research, Doug.
Yep, they are now. Those are the results of a number of small volcanic eruptions that have occurred that increased the stratospheric aerosol burden and cooled the planet slightly. That's actually one of the contributors in principle to the hiatus in the early 2000s.
Can you cite the source for NOAA refuting or reversing their study that I just cited? Can you find and cite that source?
I would point to Mike Mill's paper, which
I'm talking
shows
about NOAA.
Model
I'm not
results.
I'm talking about some individual with an opinion. I'm talking about you're stating NOAA has reversed their opinion, and I have not seen any such data, and I would challenge you to cite it. They're stating right here they do not understand where these aerosols are coming from.
Mike Knowles.
If you're not interested in the citation, then you shouldn't bother asking for it.
Okay.
Not when you're citing an individual, not a single
individual. No, I was citing a paper.
Oh, paper, okay.
It has come out since then. That has model results that are show the consistency between stratospheric aerosol concentrations and what one would expect based on the volcanic record.
A paper from where, Doug? What source?
NCAR.
And that paper has stated that the increase in particulates that NOAA cited, they're now trying to find an excuse for. Is that correct? You'll send us that paper. That refutes NOAA specifically.
You have an interesting turn of phrase there. You might want to start with a little bit more of an open mind rather than
Doug, wait a minute.
Suggesting that one finds an excuse for data.
You stated that if there was an increase in particulates in the stratosphere, you would know it. I cited the study from NOAA.
And that is exactly why I would say you would know it, is because we have those measurements, and they did see that increase. And that increase, as you and I both agree, that increase contributed to a slight cooling in the planet. And that's actually the evidence that we use to say that at least in principle it would be possible to do this deliberately if we wanted.
You just said it really wouldn't be.
It would be possible if somebody really wanted to develop aircraft that could deliver cargo up to the stratosphere. Those aircraft don't exist today. Nobody has ever thought about, or nobody has intentionally done that. But I don't think it's a fundamentally hard thing to do. It just hasn't been done.
Okay, we just refuted that as well. You keep using the stratosphere term, Doug. Stratosphere starts as low as
23,000
feet.
I'm being a little
bit
concise. You're correct.
We see aircraft.
Nobody has been deliberately putting aerosols at 70,000 feet into the Earth's atmosphere.
Okay, I never said that. Have you ever heard me say 70,000 feet ever anywhere in 15 years of trying to expose this issue? Never have I said that.
Said that people are deliberately cooling the planet, and you haven't explained how people can put material at 40,000 feet and deliberately cool the planet.
I've never
the material just doesn't stay there long enough to make a big difference.
I think he's saying there's deliberate geoengineering being conducted
that's
in real
correct.
Time. It doesn't
that's
necessarily.
Correct.
Maybe they're trying to cool the planet, but that's not necessarily occurring.
It's possible that they're just inconceivably stupid.
Can we answer that one? Hey, Doug, how much intelligence does it take to frack and pump chemicals into the strata, into the groundwater, or to detonate 2,000 nuclear bombs, or to build 60 more nuke plants when Fukushima may kill us all? Do I think
at least
the
if you're fracking, you get something
stupid?
Out of
yes.
it.
Yes. Pardon me?
At least if you're fracking, you get something out of it, right?
So
people who
you're
are actually
fracking
doing
too.
The fracking are making money.
So let me quote from, we have military documents owning the weather. Weather is a weapon of war. You don't think they're getting something out of this? I think the historical documents say something quite different, Doug.
The subject that I do work in and the subject that I will say emphatically is not happening is people deliberately trying to cool the entire planet. I will agree with you completely that people actually do weather modification. That's public record. And that the military, in principle, would love it if they actually were able to do more.
What you're stating, Doug, when we have the entire climate science community discussing geoengineering. We have every government around the globe discussing geoengineering. We have scientists saying we have less than 3 years left before we're well past the point of no return, which I'd argue we're past already.
So would
I. You're inferring that, I think if I understand you correctly, you're inferring that you know nobody is geoengineering based on your definition of geoengineering, which means they're not putting anything at 70,000 feet. And I don't understand the relevance to the question when that's your definition of geoengineering.
So my definition of geoengineering is people deliberately cooling the planet.
And what do you base that conclusion on, Doug?
That nobody's doing that. So
I want to know as an academician, how can you possibly make such a statement with any sort of certainty as an academician? Answer me that.
Because I know what the measurements are of satellite-based and ground-based and balloon-based stratospheric chemical composition. I know that those are consistent with what we expect from volcanics. And I've been involved in lots of discussions about this subject of climate engineering for the last decade. And I also happen to be an aerospace engineer by training. And I'm well aware that you couldn't actually build a fleet of large cargo aircraft that could get things high enough into the atmosphere.
Okay. We're back to that point, though. We're back to your point of 70,000 feet. Nobody's discussing that, Doug.
So the reason that I made that point, and this is where you interrupted me before.
We're not here to talk about your definition of climate engineering, Doug. We're not here to talk about that. When we have,
Dane, actually, we are.
So this is your definition. This is
Douglas
McMartin's.
If you're going to make up a different definition, that's perfectly fine, and we can talk about weather modification if you want. And I'm not going to dispute the fact that there's weather modification going on.
We're talking about stratospheric climate engineering, stratospheric aerosol injection, the stratosphere, which you said couldn't be reached, and I immediately refuted that. Then you changed the bar. You raised the bar to your particular definition of geoengineering, Doug. That's exactly what you did.
Because you didn't let me finish my sentence. If you'd shut up for a second and listen, you might learn something.
Show a little courtesy, Doug. Don't tell me
to
shut up.
It would be nice if you were to do the same.
Show a little courtesy.
Okay, well,
Dane, you keep interrupting me.
Go ahead.
All the time.
Go ahead, Professor McMartin. Finish the sentence that specifically that you were pointing out.
The point that Dane does not want to listen to is that depending on the altitude that material is released into the atmosphere, it strongly affects the residence time. The only way that it is realistic to actually have a global effect on the climate is to put material at least 60,000 feet and really more like 70,000 feet. And the reason for that is that the air up at that altitude is sufficiently stratified that the material stays there for about a year. If you were to put material at 35, 40, 45,000 feet where the airplanes can actually get to, that material only stays in the atmosphere for a week or two. And the amount of material that you would have to put to have a measurable effect on the climate is just truly, truly enormous and beyond the scale that anyone could conceivably do. So it is certainly possible for somebody to fly an airplane to 45,000 feet and dump some material there, but it's not going to have a measurable effect on the global climate.
Okay, let's. Dane, do you want to respond?
Wait a minute. Let's back into this. First, let's say not going to have a measurable effect on the global climate. You're saying putting tens of millions of tons, which is the stated goal of geoengineer David Keith, who I know and work with, his stated goal on the record, Doug, your listeners can look this up, Jeff, is to put 20 million tons of aluminum nanoparticulates into the atmosphere. You're saying that that wouldn't affect the global climate? We have NOAA stating that the aircraft trails, whatever those are radically affecting the global climate. How can you possibly say it wouldn't affect the climate? Do you want to clarify that question first?
Dane, did you want to repeat back the previous sentence that I made about altitude?
No. You said that if they were putting materials into the climate at 40,000 feet, it would not affect the climate. How can you possibly make that statement? When you alter convection, Doug, I'm losing 60, 70, 80% of my solar PV uptake because of direct sunlight loss. When you cover the horizon and aircraft emissions are covering the entire horizon, how can you possibly say, when NOAA admits on the record, that that has a radical effect on the climate? Your only argument, Doug, is that you're talking about your definition of 70.
Has been made.
Hey, wait a minute. You said I'm interrupting you, and you're not letting me finish, Doug.
Hold on. Let Dane finish. Go ahead, Dane.
Your argument is what you describe as Douglas McMartin's personal definition of climate engineering occurring at 70,000 feet, and you know that that's not occurring. That's not what we're talking about here, Doug. That's not what we're talking about. Do you know or deny that David Keith has proposed putting tens of millions of tons of aluminum nanoparticulates, the most recognized geoengineer in the world, into the atmosphere? Will you acknowledge
that? I think that is a highly misleading statement on at least three counts.
Do you deny that?
I think
he said
you know
that?
It's a misleading statement. First of
I'm asking, do you know he said that?
I would say that is a highly misleading statement, and I think it would be the correct statement is David Keith wrote a paper that essentially asked the question of, hey, everybody normally talks about putting sulfate. Maybe you could do this with aluminum. And he wrote the paper, and I think the conclusion from that paper was, yeah, you could do it, but it probably wouldn't be a good idea. That's not the same as proposing something. It's basically asking a question and answering it. The amount of material that he was talking about, once again, he was talking about putting that sufficiently high into the atmosphere that you're up in the region where you have a residence time of a year, not in a region where you have a residence time of a week.
So why does MIT then, Doug, state from David Keith that geoengineering would be incredibly cheap and easy? Quote from MIT. You're saying it's impossible. Dr. Keith
today,
at MIT saying it would be incredibly cheap and easy. How do you refute that?
The difference between the English tense would be and the English word is.
You know, semantics aren't going to change this argument. That's exactly what was stated.
Dane, that's not semantics.
Future tense.
Tense actually
not
matters.
Future tense.
There's a difference between something being possible and something being done. I think you should understand that. And don't try to insult people.
So your interpretation
with
of
the distinction between saying something would be easy is proof that it is currently easy today. Those are not the same thing.
So would means in their term, what, 100 years from now or 200 years from now? Because none of their data states that. It says right now, and Doug, I was at the conference where David Keith proposed 10 million tons of aluminum nanoparticulates in the atmosphere. So it's on film. I would ask your listeners to look at that. You know, from every angle, when the stratosphere definition is redefined by you, when the NOAA study is redefined by you, not citing any particular source, and now you redefine the MIT study, which directly from David Keith and MIT stating it would be cheap and easy, not off in the future, now. So you're adding your own interpretation onto everything and asking us to accept that as fact. I'm sorry, I'm not going to throw all these facts out the window because you say differently.
Actually, I think you're just not listening to what I'm saying.
I am listening
to what
you're saying.
That it would not fundamentally be difficult to design an airplane that could do that. That's not the same statement as an aircraft currently exists to do that. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that. The
study
don't
agree
say
with
anything
the statement that
anything of that type,
possible
Doug,
is different.
You know,
from
you're making
existing?
This up as you go, my friend. The studies don't say anything like that. Nothing like that.
Professor McMartin, this is a radio station. You can't use profanity. Okay, so please
just,
don't do that again.
Dane is refusing to answer a simple question. Dane, do you believe that there is a distinction between saying something is possible and something is being done? Yes or no?
It's an irrelevant question, Doug.
It's not an
irrelevant
question
say
because
would be.
You're claiming that I'm saying those are... that is the part of the basis of your argument.
Can we jump...
You said
can
I'm
we get
redefining
past this?
What MIT said, and I'm saying no, you're the one redefining it. Answer the question, yes or no?
Doug, the study doesn't say what you said, period.
It says it would be easy. I agree.
It doesn't say someday we could design aircraft. It says that this is the capability now. So if you want to, again, change the rules
every time
I refute your statement.
Please provide it.
I just did provide it. Listeners can look it up.
No, they can. Well, they can try. They're not going to find anything.
They can find an MIT study with Dr. David Keith saying it would be cheap and easy, period.
Correct.
Not someday in the future, not when we invent some new technology. Cheap and easy now.
Question. Does the word would be... the same as
I'm
the
not
going
to play your
is.
Game of semantics. I'm asking people to look at the study, okay? I'm not going to play semantics with you. The study doesn't say what
you
said,
are playing
period.
Semantics.
Okay, let's get past the semantic part of it because we have a half hour left, and I think we can cover some good ground here. Professor McMartin, you see what's going on, obviously, that Dane's available data that he has presented, and he represents a large group of people with similar concerns on this issue. What they're seeing seems to look exactly like the geoengineering operations being proposed. Now, you're saying it's 13 miles up into the stratosphere. That would be the appropriate area to do this level of geoengineering to cool the planet if necessary. And we don't have the technology to do that yet. But what do you suspect people are seeing that looks almost exactly like some of the geoengineering operations being proposed?
First of all, if somebody actually were putting stuff up into the stratosphere, you actually probably wouldn't see anything at all. Certainly the normal thing that is proposed is sulfur dioxide, which is just a gas, so you'd never see it. The trails that you see behind airplanes, the contrails, that is water that is condensed. So one of the byproducts of combustion is water vapor. And that's the same process as forming clouds.
How do you know that that is condensation? How can you say as an academician definitively that you know that that is condensation that we see all over the globe? As an academician, how can you possibly say that?
So strictly speaking, I'm trusting the fact that tens of thousands of atmospheric scientists, basically every atmospheric scientist on the planet, says exactly the same thing, plus just basic, I do know that clouds are made of water vapor, and I do know that an airplane, when it flies, produces water vapor as well as lots of cloud condensation nuclei. And so it does seem like the simpler hypothesis to assume that tens of thousands of people aren't lying to me, and that, in fact, if you add water vapor in a concentrated form into the atmosphere, then at least some of the time it will condense into clouds.
Okay, can I have my turn, Doug? I don't want you to use profanity against me again. I just want to have my turn
I'm sorry, Dane. You've just been really frustrating me because you don't listen to what I say.
Doug, take a look in the mirror, my friend. Cloud condensation nuclei, that's a particle, is it not? Does that not mean a particle? Cloud condensation nuclei
yes.
is a particle, correct?
Yes.
So you're admitting there is a particle coming out of the aircraft.
Oh, absolutely.
In regard to why scientists aren't lining up to sound the alarm, Doug, do you think that the illegal federal gag order on all National Weather Service and all NOAA employees might be a factor? An illegal, they have no First Amendment rights to begin with, and now there's an illegal federal gag order on them. Doug, why would we think they would be lining up to sound the alarm on something that they know they would face ferocious legal ramifications, if not far worse? Are you aware of the illegal federal gag order, Doug?
Actually, I'm not. But because I certainly talk to scientists from time to time. But you're also assuming that every atmospheric scientist on every single country in the entire planet is somehow in on this and has been for decades.
Well, Doug, if this is so definitive, let me ask this. When our legal team surveyed 1,500 climate scientists, including the 77 who denied or said chemtrails weren't real and didn't use, as Ken Caldera, whom I know you know, intentionally didn't use the geoengineering term or any of the science terms related to it. But when we did, and we asked those 77 scientists and 1,430 more, none, not one, was willing to deny that climate engineering had already been deployed. Not one. Why do you think that is, Doug?
Can you name a single one who said that it was being deployed?
Dane.
That's not the point.
Actually, it is.
If it's not, and they're so sure it's not, Doug, why would they have any trouble denying it? Why would they have any trouble denying it? That's the point. If it's not happening and you're so sure it's not happening, why were none willing to deny it? Not one of 1,500. That's the point.
We all get hundreds of emails a day. I suspect that if you go back, you'll discover that most people just deleted your email and threw it in the trash as being not respondable to. But I think you actually did post the responses of some people on your website.
Oh, I heard from many. Heard from Alan Robach, even. I know you know him. He was angry, but he wouldn't deny it. Wouldn't deny it. I know you know Alan Robach. He didn't throw it in the trash. He's one that I heard back from. We heard back from Marsha McNutt, the head of the National Academy of Sciences, within 3 hours, heard back from Ms. McNutt.
If you can name a single climate scientist who says this is going on, then I would certainly like to know the name of that person. I would be very interested in talking to
them. So unless or until those who know they would face grave ramifications from this if they were to admit to it, unless they do, therefore, it can't be true. That's not a strong argument, Doug. We have the same elements listed in climate engineering patents. And if you're telling me that condensation can block 90% of my solar PV uptake, that's simply a lie. That's a lie. Condensation can't block 90% of solar power uptake. It can't. So
actually, Dane, if 90% of the sunlight was blocked from the planet, we'd all be dead.
Doug, I'm not talking about 24/7 around the clock, and we do have global dimming that's 20 to 30%, depending on the study, do we not? Do we not have global dimming, Doug?
If we had 20% global dimming, we'd all be dead.
Well, official studies say so. I encourage listeners to watch BBC Dimming the Sun. Watch the documentary Dimming the Sun. It's online, or they can rent and buy a copy. So there are plenty of academicians who dispute that, Doug, and I can tell you firsthand my lack of solar uptake. And we have commercial solar power plants that are producing, in some cases, half what their design said they should have produced. Half, Doug. How many people are seeing blue skies now? Not very often at all. Well, the listeners can all jump in on that and decide how much they agree with you on that one. So, you know, hear no evil, see no evil. But, Doug,
so, like I said before, that has nothing to do with
deliberately cooling. I'm asking you that.
Hold on a second. Dane, give Doug a chance to respond. Go ahead, Doug.
So there's two separate questions here that are completely unrelated. One is the question of, is somebody deliberately cooling the planet? We've already gone through that one, and you simply don't want to listen to any of the things that I said. The second one is more or less independent, is do we believe that contrails are actually contrails?
Is somebody deliberately cooling the planet? It's because it doesn't work, Doug. We've been through the question, you're right. Just because it's not working overall doesn't mean it isn't going on. So again, we're back to a game of semantics, are we not?
So you're asserting that there's this enormous, vast conspiracy of people, like tens and tens of thousands of people in every country of the planet, who's been secretly plotting to do something even though they know it doesn't do anything whatsoever.
How
and the alternative
hypothesis is
water vapor condenses.
Wait, can you just say that again? Sometimes you pause and it seems like you're wanting a response, but then you start talking,
right.
So it's a little confusing. Finish that sentence, please.
Yeah, so it strikes me there's two hypotheses, right? One is that water vapor condenses. And the other hypothesis is that there's a vast conspiracy of tens of thousands of atmospheric scientists and plane mechanics and so forth who are all in on this conspiracy of doing something even though they know perfectly well it doesn't actually do anything useful.
How in the world would they know that when everybody's compartmentalized? Do you think that the pilot in Vietnam who was spraying his comrade on the ground with Agent Orange was told, hey, this is going to kill your buddy, by the way? No, of course not. Do you think that the soldiers out with goggles on, being told to watch the nuclear bomb go off, we're told, hey, you're going to get cancer and die? Doug, do you think that the 450,000 Americans that have now died based on peer-reviewed study as a direct result of the nuclear bombs that were detonated in Nevada without the public's knowledge or consent, 450,000 Americans, do you think that they were told that there's a problem? Or those that detonated those bombs were told, by the way, you're going to kill 450,000 of your comrades? No, they weren't told. How about depleted uranium, Doug, and the 200,000 Gulf War soldiers exposed to that? I could go on and on
okay,
and on.
Okay, Dane, let Doug respond to that. Go ahead.
Logic? Dane, I agree that there's an awful lot of horrible things that go on in this world.
He's specifically talking about the logic, though.
But
I cited the gag order. I mean, we have a legal. Why would they gag the weatherman, Doug? Why would our government gag National Weather Service and NOAA?
Dane, let Doug respond. Go ahead.
So I agree with you that there's a lot of terrible things that go on in the world and have gone on in the world, but at least with those things you can say somebody was testing a nuclear bomb because they wanted to know if the nuclear bomb worked. You're asserting that people have been doing something that they know patently well doesn't work because the residence time in the atmosphere for those aerosols isn't high enough to have a meaningful effect.
Doug, you're assuming that I assume that there is some benevolence in these programs. I'm not assuming that. I've never assumed that.
I think there's generally an intention. I'm just saying there's two hypotheses, right? So your hypothesis is there's tens of thousands of people, and they're all doing something that they know doesn't work. And the alternate
hypothesis is, how would they know that?
Because I think it's pretty
easy.
There's lots of people who would know what the residence time in the troposphere is.
I tried to cite some examples for you. Do you think that, again, that soldiers that are actually inflicting damage on their own countrymen are told that that's what's going to happen? Of course they're not told. I never asserted what you just said I asserted. Never did.
So,
Doug, can you answer me this?
Okay, so only the atmospheric scientists.
Can I finish my statement? Can you answer me this? What possible reason can you give me for a federal gag order on all National Weather Service and all NOAA employees?
So first of all, I'm not aware of the gag order other than, but I do know that there have been concerns in the past from the administration who does not want to believe in climate change and think that preventing scientists from talking about climate change will be a good way to prevent regulations on fossil fuels, which, you know, ultimately we're all interested in the same thing, right? We all want a nice, healthy, livable climate for our children. Well, and
Doug, I want to refute your answer. This didn't happen just during this administration. It happened during the Obama administration, okay? So that answer doesn't hold water either.
Yeah. So send me a link that describes the gag order, because I'm not familiar with it.
Well, I would encourage you and all the listeners to look it up. So I've had a NOAA scientist state to my face off the record, we all know what's happening. We have no First Amendment protection. Now we have a gag order. And, Doug, for you to claim that the level of solar obscuration that's occurring, whatever the agenda you want to put it under, is not affecting the weather, is truly unsupportable by the data, truly unsupportable. When you can block, and I'm not saying 24/7, I didn't say that, but on occasion, I'm losing 60, 70, 80, 90% of my solar power uptake, whole horizons covered. For you to infer that that's not going to affect the weather is really not a rational conclusion.
So, interestingly enough, by the way, for what it's worth, I just Googled gag order NOAA and got a website that debunked it. So you might want to be careful suggesting
everything.
That people Google
that certainly
things.
Fixes everything, Doug. You found a website to debunk something, and that makes it not true. The original document was sent to us by the peer people. Our attorneys have talked to the peer people, public employees for environmental responsibility. So the fact that you can find something online to say it isn't so, Doug, hardly backs up your argument, does it?
Well, I think the readers can go read both sets of information and make their own judgments
and
about that.
And let's hope they
and
do.
And I hope they do.
So we would agree that the climate is in catastrophic shape. We have the top U.S. military brass stating on the record, greatest national security threat of all.
Yep.
And you believe that they're going to ask our permission before they would deploy anything like this?
Well, that's a different question. The question that I can state with certainty is that nobody has done it.
And again, how can
whether they would ask our permission before doing it is a different question. That's speculation.
As an academician, again, I challenge that premise. How can you possibly say that you know that this has never been deployed? That's an absurd statement from any academician on any subject. How can you possibly say that?
For all of the reasons that I gave you before, we've been through this, Dane. You don't listen to any of my answers.
Take my word for it. And because we're going on your definition, you know nothing's been deployed at 70,000 feet, and this is you're sort
of. No, nothing has been. My definition is deliberately cooling the planet. That's my definition.
Okay, so because
if you
want
to use a different definition,
it's not deployed.
Feel free.
But that's to reframe that. So because it's not working, therefore it can't be deployed. That's your argument, correct?
Well, it is true that somebody could be, in principle, every airplane, as you pointed out, every airplane puts a small amount of aerosol out there that forms cloud condensation nuclei. That is a true statement. That is not making a measurable difference to the temperature of the planet.
NOAA says otherwise. I could cite the NOAA article for you. They said the aircraft-formed clouds are absolutely affecting the climate quite radically.
They're actually warming the planet, and the total radiative forcing from all of the airplanes over the entire planet is of order 1% of the radiative forcing from the CO2 that we have in the atmosphere.
So then, Doug, why, when the planes were grounded after 9/11, did we have such a profound increase in daytime temperatures within 2 days? If it's such a small percentage, why did
that
we
was
have
actually debunked as being not statistically significant.
Oh, really? Okay. Now let's have listeners. And you know, Doug, the fact that the government denies things, does that really mean anything to anybody at this point? And that's your premise because the government says it isn't so.
I think the government is capable of lots of things, Dane, but I don't think the government is capable of changing the laws of physics.
We're not talking about changing the laws of physics, Doug. We're talking about changing the official narrative, Doug. And I would challenge listeners to search the BBC documentary Dimming the Sun. Watch it and decide for yourself. Lots of scientific studies cited on there. The changes after 9/11 when the aircraft were grounded were absolutely profound. Daytime temperature rise of 2 degrees, nighttime temperature rise or drop, because it wasn't trapping heat. So we had exactly what we'd expect when the particulate matter settles out of the atmosphere. Doug, if this is all just particulate matter, can you explain to me why we have up-close film footage of jets with nozzles turning on and off? What's that all about?
So I'm not an expert on that. My understanding from what other people have told me is that your pictures of jets with nozzles are the fuel dump nozzles, but I'm not an expert on that.
Fuel dump nozzles aimed right into the exhaust jet stream where they could be ignited? That doesn't make much sense, does it?
Like I said,
nozzles
I'm not...
aimed right into the exhaust jet stream.
You may have pictures of aircraft that are fitted for weather modification. I don't know. The only thing I can tell you is that nobody is doing anything that is deliberately cooling the planet. It's certainly an interesting question. If you asked me to guess, my guess is that at some point in the future somebody will, but my guess is that's 20 years away. And I actually do think it would be interesting for the listeners to actually know more about why people even think about climate engineering. I actually don't think it's a very interesting discussion to ask to go round and round again on why you think people putting stuff at 35,000, 40,000 feet is deliberately cooling the planet.
He didn't say that.
I never said that.
He told you twice now, Doug. He told you twice.
Yeah. I never said that, Doug. I simply said the fact that it's not working doesn't mean it's not going on. And again, I'm asking again, if they're not spraying a particulate matter, why do we have film footage, multiple reels of film footage of not only KC-10s, KC-135, C-17s turning on and off, which means it's clearly not condensation. We have commercial aircraft doing the same. Now, we have photographs of the nozzles on the wings, on the engine pylons aimed into the exhaust jet stream, so it's clearly not dumping fuel. They're not going to dump fuel into the exhaust jet stream where it could ignite. What do you think is creating the on and off of a condensation trail? How can you possibly turn a condensation trail on and off? Is that possible?
The answer to the first part, half of your question, is I don't know. The answer to the condensation trail is fairly straightforward. This is basically the same reason why clouds are not just sort of a uniform gray absolutely everywhere, right? The atmosphere is not uniform. So condensation trails form in the right range of humidity conditions, and as the airplane moves through different air masses or regions of different vertical shear, you will, in some cases, get a contrail forming because the humidity is right, and then in the next second, the contrail is not forming because either it's moved into a different air mass or the water vapor itself has descended or risen because of a different vertical wind.
So your belief in physics would say that you can see a trail across the entire horizon that stops as if it was cut with a knife and then might start up again within a mile, just like it was turned back on. And again, over and over and over, you're saying this is just some radical, incredibly layered, vertically layered, not horizontally, but vertically layered atmosphere that can stop a condensation trail that comes across the entire horizon as if it's been cut with a knife.
Yes.
You're saying that we should think that's normal.
Every atmospheric scientist on the planet who studies contrails does. And I'll ask you this question. Have you ever seen clouds in one part of the sky and a cloud next to it, but some region in between that doesn't have a cloud? And you're asking me to decide whether that's normal, too?
That's not the same argument, Doug.
Yes, it is.
You see an aircraft
exactly
leaving a massive plume behind it that suddenly cuts off like it was sliced off with a knife, that's not the same type of horizon-to-horizon divergence you're describing. It's not. We have film footage up close of this happening. I simply encourage listeners not to believe me or you, but to look at this film footage on their own and decide for themselves. That's the purpose of geoengineeringwatch.org, Doug. We don't have any advertising. We're non-political. We're simply presenting film footage, data, government documents, Senate documents, military documents, and asking people to look for themselves, decide for themselves, where is all this toxic particulate matter coming from that matches the patents exactly? Why do we have so much global dimming, the exact goal of solar radiation management? We have film photographs or footage of aircraft with nozzles turning on and off. How many dots need to connect? How many? People don't believe their eyes. I'm not going
to
convince them, Doug.
So Dane, you do have lots of dots. I will tell you that. But they don't actually connect, right? So patents on weather modification, we all know weather modification goes on. Like I said, it's public record. Contrails, we can argue. I happen to think that it's a more reasonable presumption that water vapor condenses. You happen to think otherwise. But, you know, neither you nor I have actually gone up into the atmosphere ourselves.
You stated that water vapor condenses on particulates coming from the aircraft, did you not?
So in general, in order to get water vapor
condensation
to condense,
nuclei, you have to have a condensation nuclei.
Well, you don't actually, but
that we did.
But because you can also have homogeneous nucleation without that, but certainly in an aircraft exhaust, there's not a shortage of condensation nuclei, and so you do have the right conditions.
And on documents, Doug, we're not talking about just patents. We're talking about, in some cases, 800-page Senate documents that describe
the
scope
and scale of weather mod. Senate document, there is no patent on the idea that you could put, let me take that back. There's no Senate documents that actually talk about doing deliberate cooling of the climate.
Okay, we're talking about semantics again, because we're talking about a date when the geoengineering term didn't even exist, but we have Senate documents 800 pages long that outline the scope and scale of global intergovernmental weather modification programs on a global scale, and that is the definition of geoengineering as well. It's just simply the term didn't exist then. And I ask your listeners, Jeff, to look up those documents. We have some of the key excerpts there, again, calling for total blanket legal immunity for everyone involved.
Can I just point out, I would also ask the listeners to go look at those documents. They're very clearly talking about weather modification and not deliberately cooling the climate.
Well, you certainly are messing with the semantics here and very consistent with your definition. But with your knowledge, Professor McMartin, of geoengineering, weather control, weather manipulation, you seem to not kind of reach over and see what the thousands and thousands and thousands of people are seeing in terms of the aerosol operations or some type of aerosol operation occurring that looks like solar radiation management or is doing the work of solar radiation management in some capacity. It has been a very difficult interview. What would be the adverse consequences that may be factored in here as a result of blocking sunlight using aerosols?
So there's a number of challenges if you were to do it. Probably the biggest challenges of all actually reflect around a lot of the things that we talked about today. It's hard to actually imagine a situation in which everybody would buy in and agree that this is a good thing to do. In terms of the actual physical climate impacts, provided it's used as a supplement to cutting carbon emissions and not a replacement for it, then the main issues would be impact on ozone and some change in local, it might change the distribution of where precipitation happens, relatively small amounts. And the short answer is we really haven't done enough research to make an informed decision. So one of the reasons that I mentioned the 20 years number earlier is I think we're at least 20 years of research away from really being able to make a reasonable information to provide to policymakers and say, here's what would happen if you were to do this.
Beyond the semantics here, there is something going on in terms of a weather control system with the deployment of these aircraft. Are you open to considering to speak on this after maybe examining the evidence yourself?
I'm not an expert on weather modification. As I've said before, there is no question that there's weather modification stuff going on. Nobody would ever deny that.
But specifically about what
public,
we're talking about. I understand. The question was, are you open to it?
In principle, I'm open to talking about it. I just It's just I would suspect that you might do better finding somebody who's an expert on that specific subject.
Okay, Jeff, if I can put a cap on this, this is really important. I get to this before the end of the show.
Sure.
Very short. I encourage your listeners to look this up. June 1958 issue of Popular Science. This is a direct quote from Dr. Joseph Kaplan, the chairman of the International Geophysical Year. Here's his quote directly from 1958 in Popular Science. Any listeners can look it up because Mr. McMartin states that we don't have the technology, we won't have it for a number of years. This is from 1958. Quote, control of Earth's weather and temperature is within the realm of practicability now, right now, says Dr. Joseph Kaplan. Again, 1958, 60 years ago. And Doug, you're telling us we still don't have the technology. It simply doesn't stack up with historical data. I'm asking people to look up on geoengineeringwatch.org. If you search geoengineeringwatch.org, Popular Science, you can see we have these articles and magazines in our possession. It was possible then. It's certainly possible now. It's going on now. It's been going on since then. We're asking people to look at the data, look at the historical data, yeah, and not just walk past the issue because some source or individual says it isn't so.
Dane, thank you so much for doing this. And Professor Douglas McMartin, a senior research associate and senior lecturer in mechanical and aerospace engineering at Cornell, thank you so much for being on this discussion on WBAI. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.